Sex is the life force energy that runs through us all. Can you use sexual energy for your spiritual evolution, or perhaps for emotional healing? Is it even possible? Clinical sexologist Dr. Martha Tara Lee will explore all these and more on Eros Evolution on Om Times Radio.
Hello, hello, and welcome to Eros Evolution. This is where sexuality and spirituality meet. My name is Martha. I'm a clinical sexologist, and I have a doctorate in human sexuality, and I'm from Eros Coaching. That's eroscoaching.com. And today I have a guest. Her name is Kitty Stryker. She's the author of Ask, Building Consent Culture. And today's show title is Navigating Consent. And I invited her to come onto the show to discuss what consent culture is, why it's important, and how it can challenge rape culture. She has been a consent activist for over 6 years, working with alternative communities to combat abuse and create sustainable accountability practices. So today we will be exploring the ways in which alternative sexualities embrace constructs of consent and the ways in which they are still learning. So who is Kitty? She is a degenerate. She'll explain more about it later. She's a writer, queer activist, and also on developing a consent culture in alternative communities. She's the founder of ConsentCulture.com, a website that ran for 4 years as a hub for LGBT, kinky, poly folks looking for a sex-critical approach to relationships, and which will be relaunched in 2017. She co-founded the Artsy Sexy Party Kinky Salon London, as well as creating the award-winning Ladies High Tea and Pornography Society, the SF, the San Francisco-based Kinky Party, Whippersnappers, and XS Head of Cosplay for Queer Gaming Convention Gamer X. That's really cool. Having finished Ask, Building Consent Culture, and an anthology through Thorn Tree Press coming out in October, Kitty tours internationally speaking at university and conferences about feminism, sex work, body positivity, queer politics, and more. She lives in she lives in Oakland, California with her wife, boyfriend, and two cats. Okay. So welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So yeah, so where do we begin?
Yes, I read your book yesterday in preparation for today's show, and it's going to come out in October, and it's called Ask, Building Consent Culture. So tell us more about the idea behind this book.
Well, I had the idea for the book a few years ago. I wanted to create an anthology, a collection, really, of different people talking about what consent culture means to them. And I wanted to make sure that it didn't just focus on consent culture as it pertains to sexuality or relationships, which is what we normally talk about. I wanted to talk about consent culture in the jail system, at hospitals, in education, and other environments where consent is still very important but isn't as frequently discussed.
Yes, and this is really a book that is 6 years in the making. So tell us more about that.
Well, about 6 years ago, I was talking to a friend of mine about our experiences in the BDSM, the bondage, discipline, sadomasochism community, otherwise kinky community, mm-hmm. about what it was like being a submissive woman in these spaces. And we were realizing as we talked to each other that we had been conditioned to accept sexual assault as normal. It had become normalized for us. It became something that we dismissed as part of the learning process, as opposed to seeing it as a consent violation. which particularly within the kinky community feels particularly problematic since we talk so much in that community about consent, safe, sane, and consensual. So as we talked back and forth, we realized that there was a lot of work to be done, specifically around BDSM and consent and abuse, and how to unpick sort of toxic ideas that culture had given us from these communities. And then the book sort of came out of that work.
Beautiful. So what you're saying is you were experiencing a non-consent as something that was normal and decided that this was not acceptable, decided to do something about it, and this book is the result of that desire.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm. So tell us a little bit about consent culture that you were running as a website, because I know, like, from your experience running that website, that's how this desire to launch this book. And so because that website is not live right now, and it's going to be relaunched this year. So could you tell us a little bit more about it?
Sure. So consentculture.com was a website that was a blog, and I hosted a bunch of my writings and other people's writings about ways in which we could challenge rape culture within our communities. And sometimes that would be, I wrote a piece, for example, called Playing with Fire, that was about my experience crossing someone's boundary and holding myself to the standard of a consent culture and how to accept ownership for crossing that boundary in a way that was healthy and safe for the person whose boundaries I crossed. That's not something that people generally admit or talk about. So I wanted to show through my own vulnerability that it was important to talk about these things and to own up when we mess up, when we go too far. I also hosted a bunch of people from alternative communities telling their own stories of their own assaults. It was anonymous, but I wanted to show that this was not just me and not just a San Francisco problem, but it was a problem that was endemic across the board, so that people began to take it more seriously.
Mm. That's great. That's really great. So I'm sure you are asked this a lot, and this is something that you spend a lot of time explaining, but I still think it's important for listeners to hear it from someone as articulate as you. What is the explanation for rape culture, and how is that different from consent culture?
Well, I think that rape culture centers, I would go so far as to call it entitlement culture, because I think when we use the term rape culture, it focuses the conversation around sexuality and power, which is very real and very important. But when we talk about an entitlement culture, people are entitled in all different areas of life. And I think that for me, the idea that someone would feel that they deserve this, regardless of the other person's consent, that is a central part of so much of our cultural understanding. It can be so far as the customer is always right, means that a customer could say, well, I can behave however I want to this worker, this retail worker, because I'm always right, and my consent is the only consent that matters. That's an example of entitlement culture, but it wouldn't necessarily fit under rape culture. Mm-hmm. So that's why I like to try to move the conversation into that environment, because I think that consent culture is so much more than just sexuality.
Beautiful. So I am a sexologist and sex educator. So of course, when I came across your book, that you were talking about on Facebook, and then that got me interested to read about your book and interview you for this show. I naturally assumed that it would be about sexuality, so I was pleasantly surprised to open it and read that. Of course, obviously, you know, it should be concerned about all areas of our lives. And there are seven areas in which your book goes into, and I'm just going to tell listeners this briefly. So they include in the bedroom, in school, in jail, in workplace, at home, in her hospital, and in the community. So these are the seven different areas, and your anthology will have 24 different pieces.
Yep.
So that's really great.
Yeah, I wanted to have, thank you. And I wanted each section to have a diverse group of voices talking about different things. Like, I didn't want in this particular book to have like a point counterpoint debate, but I wanted to have people talk about something that they were passionate about.
Yeah, you cut out.
Oh, sorry. I wanted people to feel like they had something that they could be passionate about. I didn't want to make a black writer write only about racism. I didn't want to have a person with a disability write about disability activism, unless they wanted to. I wanted that to be part of the consent process of the book. So it's sort of meta in that in putting this book together, I was very focused on consent culture for the writers of the book.
Consent culture, let me write this down. Consent culture for the writers of this book. That's good.
Yes. And I talk about that process in the intro.
Yes. And you also talked about pulling people that you knew and making sure that they were as diverse as you could. But just like anything in life, there are always constraints. And I really liked the sense that I got, which is why I asked you at the start of this show about the motivation behind it, because there was this really strong strong desire for this book that I felt was coming through. And it was that passion that I felt really anchored the book on that right note, and then everything just flowed from there. So it's really so evident to me that a lot of planning and thought went into making sure it was diverse and making sure that it covered all the different innuendos of consent. So I really loved it so much. We have a break now, and I will talk more about the book after the break.
Okay, cool.
Your conscious lifestyle on steroids. Om Times Radio. IOM FM. Host your show on IOM FM, the radio network of OM Times Media, one of the more recognized brand names in the conscious community, and is backed by the extensive marketing reach of OM Times. Hosting a show on IOM FM immediately connects you with our extensive, dedicated community.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of OM Times Radio's What Is Going On show. If you've been on a spiritual journey and know yourself to be more than just your body, mind, and emotions, yet still struggle to fully love yourself and the life you're living. If you experience childhood challenges that continue to play out as limiting patterns in your daily life. If you long for success in your relationships and career, but keep finding it eludes you. I invite you to join me on the free Journey Back to Love Symposium that I'm co-hosting June 18th to 24th. You'll get valuable insights, tools, practical processes and gifts from eight internationally renowned teachers and speakers that would not only dramatically shift your perceptions about love, but also help you understand and integrate all those places where you may have secretly believed that you were broken. So if you're ready to transform your beliefs about love, success and freedom, and finally put all your perceived limitations, fears and failures in your relationships and life behind you, visit thejourneybacktolove.com and join me on this free life-transforming journey back to love. I look forward to seeing you there.
Hi, I'm Kelly Fox, host and astrologer of The Astrology Show. Each week, I'll give you access to the current transits, which are a valuable tool that provide astrological information to help unlock the potential each of us has. Understanding the stars can help steer us in the right direction to make better informed choices. So if you're wondering what's going to happen in your week ahead, be sure to tune in to The Astrology Show for guidance, Mondays at 9 p.m. Eastern Time.
Every 2 minutes, an American is sexually assaulted. The majority of victims know their attacker. It could be your friend, your neighbor, or someone you met at a party. If you said no, it's rape, and it's a crime. This is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Call the National Sexual Assault Hotline today at 1-800-656-HOPE or visit RAIN.org. That's RAINN.ORG.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Hello, and you are listening to Eros Evolution on the Om Times Radio Network, and you can share this show with your friends by going to the link omtimes.com/mobile. With this link, you'll be able to listen to the show without needing to download any app. So on today's show, I'm talking about navigating consent with Kitty Stryker, and she's an advocate, and she's been... she's a degenderate. A writer, queer activist, and authority on developing a consent culture in alternative communities. And she was running this website, Consent Culture, for 4 years, and she's decided to pull together all her resources to produce this book, which is an anthology with 24 different pieces on in 7 different areas on how important it is to take consent in safe, sane, and consensual ways seriously. So welcome back to the show, Kitty.
Thank you.
Yes. So go on.
So I think when we left off, we were talking about the book and how the book was put together. And I wanted to talk a little bit about why the diversity was really important to me. I believe that we have 9 or 10 people of color who've written for it, and I want to say 8 or 9 of the writers are also either transgender or they are non-binary identified. And that was really important to me because when I was doing research into books about rape culture, a lot of these books were written by middle-class white women. And I thought, wow, there's so many other people who are writing on these topics, but they never get a chance to say anything about it. They never get published. And that was really disappointing to me. I felt it was important to expand the conversation outwards, which is honestly why I wanted to do an anthology and not write a book about consent culture myself. I might down the line, but I wanted the first book using the term consent culture in this way to be very diverse and across the board.
Yes, and it is indeed very diverse, and there are things that comes out in the anthology that perhaps people don't think about, such as the one by the sex worker. I can't remember exactly what it is, but I'm not sure if you remember the essay that I'm referring to.
Oh, is it in the workplace one? Is it the one?
Yes, with the porn.
Toby Hillmeyer is a friend of mine and just an amazing person, and she wrote about how when we think about workplace boundaries and sexual assault and what is appropriate and inappropriate, that doesn't always cross over into the adult industry, which is also a workplace, but there's often a little bit more of a gray area about flirting, about, you know, often our directors, at least within queer porn, our directors are our friends. So we might, and might even be our lovers. So the boundaries get a lot more muddled and a lot more complex. And I really appreciated Toby writing about that and exploring where her particular boundaries are for her workplace when she's producing and performing in porn.
Yeah, so I remember now. In that piece, she was talking about how people assume just because she is a porn performer that she's always turned on and she's happy to be sexual with anybody. And she raises like how that makes her feel. And as a sexologist, like I experience similar things. Like people assume that because I'm a sexologist and I'm open-minded, that means that I'm promiscuous and that means that I'm ready to have sex with anybody. And I am, and also because I'm an educator as well, that I'm ready and available to give advice to everybody for free, regardless of the hour of the day. And, you know, like there are people emailing me all the time who don't even introduce themselves and expect me to give them free advice unconditionally and to engage in dialogue with them like nonstop, continuously. For free. So that's really, as much as I love my work and with helping people, sometimes it gets to a point where you just don't know where to begin, and it's so frustrating.
I've totally experienced that myself, and I have learned that if it is online, I tell people, here is a way that you can pay me, and this is how much it will cost for me to give you this advice. And if it's in person, I have an arrangement at my local bar where I'm like, I will give you advice as long as I have a beer in front of me. But when the beer is gone, the advice is over. And that's like, it's not as much as my rates should be, right? But it's a way for me to say, look, my knowledge is worth something. And you have to acknowledge that it's worth something and that this is work. I think women also get that a lot more across the board because we're expected to do emotional labor for free all the time.
Yeah. Yes. And it's great that you're sharing with me what's happening with you, because as you can tell, I get upset. And so that piece actually triggered things in me. And then, there were things that I'm very sure that anybody who reads this anthology is going to get something from me, regardless of their language capacity or their academic qualifications, because this book with different essays just goes across the board and will definitely say something to everybody. And it's so important for us to get all these different perspectives to really appreciate consent culture.
Yeah, it was really important to me. Similarly to the ethnic diversity and the gender diversity, I really wanted it to bridge the gap between 101 style conversations and like 2 or even 301 style conversations. I didn't want the entire book to be academic. And I tried very hard to get even my academic friends to kind of make it a little bit more layman's terms. But I think that it's nice to me that some people who have read the book have said, yeah, some of this stuff's really basic, but some of it really made me think. And that was my goal. I wanted it to provide an entry point for people who had never thought about this before, but also challenge people who do think about it all the time.
Yeah, that's really great. So tell us, because there's this big emphasis on diversity in your book. Tell us more about that.
Well, so the other area of diversity that I think is kind of cool is that I have a multi-generational diversity. I have writers like Roz Kaveni and Carol Queen who are sort of community advocates and have been for, you know, decades. And then I have people like Lori Penny, who is like a younger feminist. And I like that there's such a range there that you can have, you know, my generation and even slightly younger, but also you can have like the baby boomer generation and even slightly older. I think that seeing the diversity of how different generations think about and contextualize consent and how many ways they're similar really helps us take the work that people have done before us and take it that step further.
Mm, yes. So for people who are still at a 101 level when it comes to consent, what would you be able to begin educating them on that?
Well, I would say that a couple of the areas that the book specifically covers would be things like consent in there's a great piece by Sean Taylor that talks about male interactions with women and the consent issues there and unpicking toxic masculinity. I think that that's a very 101 issue that would be very provocative and interesting for men to explore. Zev Ubu wrote a great piece about consent culture and sex parties that's fairly basic and explains a lot about having clear boundaries and respecting boundaries and responding positively to boundaries in a way that I think is very accessible for someone new to this, but also just super valuable.
Mm. Yes, I really liked how current the book is because it talks about things that are happening for people who are in sexuality of any sort. For instance, people who go to sex parties, people who are learning about consent through cuddle parties, and even the movie Hot Girl Wanted, which is on Netflix, which also is being discussed in the book.
Yeah. I wanted it to be not too current, but current enough.
That's great. So we'll come back and discuss more about your work and the book.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times. Co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Hi, this is Julie Geigel.
And I'm Susan Schuler.
And I'm Lori Walker.
And we are
the Psychic Angel Channelers
from Angel Talk Tuesday.
Tune in every week at 10 a.m. Eastern on OmTimesRadio.com.
The angels have heard your call and are here to help.
Are you ready to receive?
Bathe in the beautiful vibrational frequency to help you heal, expand, and remember your magnificence with Angel Talk Tuesday.
What's up? This is Brad and Mike from Linkin Park for Lifebeat, the music industry fights AIDS. Listen up, times are tough and you get a lot of things thrown your way. If you're being pressured to have sex and you're not ready, then say no. If you're having sex, be smart and use protection. Respect yourself and protect yourself.
For more information, call the National AIDS Hotline at 1-800-342-AIDS or log on to www.lifebeat.org.
And welcome back to Eros Evolution. I'm with Kitty Stryker, and this is the first time that I have somebody who calls herself a degenerate, and I have no idea what that is. I'm from Singapore. I'm Singaporean, and I spent very little time in the United States, and I was only there really for my doctorate, and I haven't been back there for the last 7-8 years. So, Kitty, please explain to us what's a degenerate.
So, it's called the degenerate, and it is a it's an art collective of trans and queer people, mostly femmes, who do like performance art pieces and create zines, and are kind of a mutual aid society for queer and trans people. There's a chapter in San Francisco that I'm a part of, but there's also chapters across the U.S. and I think they're starting to sprout up internationally, which is really cool. So it's been something that's been very close to my heart, getting to do some queer and trans activism. Actually, the Degenderettes did a lecture on consent culture and accountability for a group here in Oakland. So it's been nice to kind of combine my interests together.
That's great. So where can people go find out more about this work?
So you can find out more about the book on Amazon. It's actually available for pre-order. I'm also doing a crowdfunding campaign for the book tour. Initially, I plan on doing, it's already been funded for a West Coast tour. So I'll be going to Seattle and Portland and, you know, the Bay Area, probably Santa Cruz, and then down to LA. But what I'd really like to do is I'd like to do an East Coast tour and possibly even the UK and Europe. So I'm trying to raise some money. That is on Indiegogo. That's IndieGogo.com. If you look up consent culture on there, it'll pop right up. So I'm trying to raise some money to go on this grand book tour where I'll be doing workshops and lectures and panels about this topic.
Oh, that's so important. And we all know that nothing beats really meeting you in person, and also the energy and the inspiration. It's very different listening to someone on a radio show. It's different reading from a book and meeting someone in person. So I really hope that you'll be able to tour as many places as possible, because I love this book that you've put together. And several of the pieces inside really moved me. So I really wish you all the best. So just to repeat, you're saying that people can go into Indiegogo, look up consent culture, and they will be able to crowdfund and put together some coins and dollars towards this really worthy project. And if people would like to get a copy of your book, they can actually pre-order it on Amazon. And the title of the book again is called Ask, Building Consent Culture.
Yep. And there are actually, if you go to the Indiegogo, I do have international shipping. And you can get the book a little bit earlier than anybody else. You'll get it signed, and there's different perks like getting consent-themed stickers or getting a T-shirt or getting there's a thing that's a zine that I'm planning on making that's going to be So You've Been Called Out, What Now? The idea of the zine is it'll be an 8-page guide on how to create sustainable accountability within your community, not just for other people, but also for yourself. One of the things that I've learned a lot in this work is people are very uncomfortable and scared of being told that they cross somebody's boundary. And one of the things that I think is incredibly important is to teach people how to acknowledge that they've crossed somebody's boundary without being defensive and without lashing out. Because I think that we naturally want to do that. We want to tell, like, say, oh, well, I'm a good person, so I would never hurt somebody. But we forget that sometimes we hurt people accidentally, and sometimes miscommunication happens. And it doesn't mean that you're a bad person, but it does mean that you still hurt somebody, and it's important to acknowledge that and center them in that healing process.
Yes. Indeed. Yes. So let's meditate on that. We hurt people without knowing, and the reason why we do that is we just don't know better. And by becoming more informed, perhaps we start to become much more conscious about it, and we become a power of change and a tower of influence. So I really think it's really important.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's also one of the things that I try to do is I model the things that I talk about. So when someone comes up to me and says, hey, you know, Kitty, you said something that I found very hurtful, showing how to respond to that, being like, I'm so sorry. How can I help you feel safe right now? What can I do to help you feel better? Do you want an explanation? Do you want an apology? Like, what do you need? And letting the person who's been hurt make those decisions and giving them agency to say what they need rather than projecting onto them what you think they need, I think is something that could really change the conversation about consent.
Yes, definitely. So I just want to talk about the piece that you were mentioning just before the break with by Sean Tyler, and in his piece, The Power of Men Teaching Men. And it was really about him learning that it is okay to not take it personal when a woman says no to touch. And then his awakening and emergence to being able to hold other men accountable for their sexual violence and being able to step into his power and actually be an advocate and actually protect women. That was really powerful for me. And this was just a man being really honest. Yes, I really love that piece. And another one that really touched me and I started to cry was Laura Kate's piece, To Keep a Roof Over My Head, I Consented to Delaying My Transition. So in transitioning...
Yeah, that one was intense.
Yes. So I started crying. Because in transitioning to male to female, what happened was that she didn't get any permission from her parents, and because that would mean not having a roof over her head at puberty, and that was a very hard thing at 15, and so she delayed transitioning for a year, and as a result of that, there were irreversible changes to her body, which meant that she doesn't look as female as she would have liked to, and this would affect, of course, the quality of her life for the rest of her life, and that was like so painful for me to read about, because that is the kind of ignorance and the suffering that happens from that. I mean, it's her body, it's her choice, and yet this is something, because of the pressure by her parents, this is what took out of her life.
Absolutely, and I think that... I mean, there's so many, I'd love to write or even like cultivate really another book on this topic, because I think that there's certain things that this brought up for me, specifically children and consent and our ideas of like in the United States, we're dealing a lot with people saying, oh, well, if you're a teenager, you can't really know what your gender identity is. So is it okay to allow someone who's a teen to, you know, take hormone blockers or to get a surgical enhancement or whatever. And like, I think that the question that keeps bringing up for me as somebody who's married to a trans woman is it something that your consent as a parent is more important for your child than your child's consent to what they need? And I think that's really complex. I don't think that there's a simple answer to that. As a parental figure, you have to make decisions for your children that your children may or may not like. But when it comes to something like gender identity, I feel like when you drag your feet, as Laura Kate's piece shows, you can cause harm that will harm this person for the rest of their lives. So it's really hard to say. So I'd really like to get parents and children talking about consent culture in their interactions with each other. I think that that's, again, a really interesting area that doesn't get discussed very much.
Yes. And in recent years, we read about transgender kids coming forward and their parents being really supportive and allowing them to begin the transition even way before puberty, say like 6 or 7. And these stories are coming out and they come across really positive, but we forget about parents who don't agree and don't understand and who are ignorant, and the child is not getting the kind of psychological support that they need. And so it is really important to talk about consent of the child's body. And this was also in another piece called Bodily Autonomy for Kids. And this was a parent who was talking about, you know, don't touch my child without permission, and also like why are you touching my stomach? You know, just because I'm pregnant doesn't mean mm-hmm. you can just come up and grab me. So that was really a good piece as well.
Yeah, and it's definitely the piece that made me think, wow, this is an area we don't talk about very often, and why is that? Why don't we talk about how to teach bodily autonomy to children and how to encourage children to stand up for themselves in that way? Is that something that would be very useful and very helpful? And as somebody who was raised that way, I kind of think so. I think that if you give children that kind of education, they can be very self-sustaining in a lot of ways.
Mm. Yes. So one of the things that happens in my culture is, well, we'll come back and talk more about it. So be sure to check out Kitty Striker's website. That's STRYKER.com. Kitty Striker, one word, .com.
The best of the conscious minds in the world. Om Times Radio, your conscious lifestyle on steroids. The number one reason girls drop out of school in sub-Saharan Africa is lack of access to feminine hygiene products. The Pads for School Girls Project, an outreach of Humanity Healing International, is changing this paradigm by setting up sewing programs at schools, teaching girls a vocational skill, while producing the reusable pads that help keep them attending classes. The girls pay it forward by making and giving pad kits to other girls in need. To learn more, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Join me, Tammy Adams, intuitive life coach and spiritual healer, for my new show, Karma Talk. Learn how to get rid of your karma so that you can start living the life you are meant to live. I am not going to tell you what you want to hear, but what you need to hear. Join me on Wednesday at 12 p.m. Eastern Time for Karma Talk on Om Time Radio.
It's on us to stop sexual assault.
To get in the way before it happens.
To get a friend home safe.
And to not blame the victim.
It's on us.
To look out for each other.
To not look the other way.
It's on us to stand up.
To step in.
To take responsibility.
It's on us. All of us
to stop sexual assault.
Learn how and take the pledge at itsonus.org.
And welcome back to the last 15 minutes of today's show. And we are with Kitty Striker, and we are talking about consent in today's show. And this is because her book, Ask, Building Consent Culture, which is available on Amazon for pre-order, and also you can support her by her crowdfunding project, that's Indiegogo, consent culture, and you'll be able to find that page. So she's looking for support for orders for her book and also through the crowdfunding page Indiegogo. And she's can be found on kittystriker.com. That's STRYKER.com. kittystriker.com, one word and one word. And on her Facebook page, that's facebook.com/officiallykittystriker. Twitter, Kitty Striker, and on medium.com, you can look for her, Kitty Striker. So I really love her book, and it's so important to be talking about this topic. So yes, go ahead.
Yeah, so I think that what I want to do next is I really want to take this, like, sort of take a temperature with this book and find out what areas to write about more. I'm very interested in, like I was saying earlier, doing a consent culture and parenting book. I'm also very interested in a consent culture around the world book. I would love to get, since this book is very United States and UK centric, I want to expand outside of that because I think that there's people doing amazing work in this area all around the world. And it's so often that it gets focused on, you know, the United States and the UK. And I'd like to move beyond that.
Yeah, I'm really excited reading your book, which is an anthology with 24 different essays and perspectives that was really beautifully curated, that you continue this work and go on to your next book. Because I'm really excited to hear more from you about consent and how we can have a culture in which people are really aware of what they can be doing. Like, this is such a difficult topic to teach adults because these people have left the education system. They think they know it all. And so it's so important to continue these dialogues with them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I also, at some point, I want to write a book myself, not just an anthology. I think the anthologies are very important because I do have a name and a platform so I can help other people get recognition for their work. But I also do want to write a book myself on consent culture and sex work, which is an area I have a lot of experience in. I would like to write about sort of an expansion of the zine that I'm giving away as part of the Indiegogo campaign. I want to write a book that is actual guidance, like logistics for accountability processes and for cultivating consent culture in your own life. Perhaps it would be something like a daily meditation on consent culture and ways for people to ask themselves questions about consent culture so that they can begin to conceptualize it in a way that isn't just bedroom exclusive. Or it might be more of a guide that's like, here are actual steps on how you do this work. 'Cause I think people, there's a lot of work out there about how rape culture is bad and entitlement is bad, but we need a substitution. We need to show people what to do instead. And if we don't have that, if we can't provide that, it's going to be next to impossible to change the way that we interact with each other. So I want to try to help create like a dialogue about what to do next and what to do instead of that.
Yes, that's very important. So I really wish you all the best. So what are some of the ways in which people can begin now? Like, you know, not wait for your book, but like start doing some of the right things.
Yeah, I mean, I would say the first most valuable thing is learn how to say, how to hear no gracefully. If you ask somebody, here's a great example. You're out with your friends and they're having, you know, a drink together and you say, oh, you know, or one of your friends says, oh, I need to go home. Rather than saying, oh, no, you should stay for another drink, it's saying, okay, I respect that, you know, and like learning to hear when someone is saying no, not just when they verbalize no, but also when they say, I really can't, or like their body language looks reluctant. It's important to pick up on those things and to not pout when you hear no, but say, oh, great. Thank you for taking care of yourself. The reason I think that's so important is that if we pout or we whine about someone saying no to us, we are kind of unconsciously coercing them into saying yes. We are punishing them on some level for saying no. But if we say, oh, wow, you know, awesome, thank you for trusting me and trusting my reaction that I'm going to respect your no, we're encouraging them to say no. And one of the things that I try to tell people all the time is, if someone can't say no, then their yes doesn't mean anything. And so the more that we listen to no, the better. I try to remind people that when someone says no to you, it is a signal of trust, because they trust that you'll respect that. So the more that we can encourage people to do it, the better.
Yes. So that's very important, because I think we are conditioned to behave in certain ways, and we sometimes don't even know why we behave like that. Like when someone leaves a bad party, like we just assume like we should say, oh, you should stay, you should stay. And that's actually pretty manipulative if we think about it.
Yeah, and I mean, and I think that the other piece of advice I generally give is give people lots of outs. When I asked people to review this book, like, again, this is the example of the meta way in which I tried to create consent culture around the book. I would tell people like, hey, I would love it if you would review this for me. But don't worry if you don't have time. That's totally fine. I get that. No is an acceptable answer. And by saying that, you know, some people said no. And I was like, great, no problem. Like, let me know if you change your mind, but I won't bug you about it again. And other people were like, oh, you know, yeah, absolutely. Here's my time constraints. Here's when I can get it to you by. But by telling them, like, you can say no to me and that's fine, that allowed them to feel more comfortable saying yes and negotiating further, rather than feeling like, hey, you're my friend, you should totally do this for me. You know what I mean? Like, it, that would create a coercive and manipulative environment that I didn't want.
Yeah, and that's not a genuine yes. And yeah, it's you know, like, one of the things that happens in my workshops is if I'm working so hard to get people to my workshop, they're not the right people to be there.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, it's kind of, I feel like it's my responsibility to make this attractive so that people genuinely want to do this work. And it's hard work. And it's often, like, you don't get any gratitude for it. So, like, I get it when people are like, yeah, I'd rather not. I totally understand. But I also feel so passionately about it that I think it's kind of infectious. And people are like, oh, yeah, like, actually, that does sound good. And that does sound like a much healthier, happier life. Maybe I could give that a try. And that's really important to me.
Yes. So it's really good to hear this backstory of the book, because this is a book on consent culture. And obviously, of course, you know, you would be applying all the principles of consent to the creation of it and the process of it. So that's really honorable to know that. So I just want to do a shout out for you about you and your work. So you are the founder of Consent Culture. This website has started, ran for 4 years, and is going to be relaunched this year. And you co-founded the artsy, sexy party, Kinky Salon London, and also the award-winning Ladies High Tea and Pornography Society, as well as the San Francisco-based Kink Party, Whipper Snappers. And so, and also you are the head of cosplay for Queer Gaming Convention Gamer X. And so these are the different initiatives that you have. So for people who are interested to find out more about your work, obviously they can go to your website. That's kittystryker.com. That's STRYKER. So is there anything that you want to do a shout out for?
Well, I would say the next most interesting thing that you can read from me is I just finished a piece about, I don't know if you're familiar with the Bachelor franchise, but like the Bachelor, the Bachelorette, Bachelor in Paradise.
Mm-hmm.
I just wrote a piece mm-hmm. about that franchise and the ways in which it prioritizes violations of consent in the very way the show is done. So you'll be seeing that on The Guardian fairly soon. If you want to keep in touch with my writing, check out my Medium, medium.com/Kitty Stryker has everything that I write, pretty much. It gets updated more often than my personal blog. So that's the best place to, like, find out what I'm writing about. And, of course, at Kitty Stryker on Twitter is where I'm most active. So you'll see any articles that I'm writing, any projects I'm working on, and various projects that I'm signal boosting.
Yes. So that's very interesting, you mentioning and being able to do a commentary about the Bachelor series, because I follow it. I follow it. I love it. And when you are open to such things and you think, oh, that's really fun, you may not be realizing what you are actually picking up and learning from the lack of consent. So it's important
Absolutely.
To read that piece. And people can read it on medium.com as well, or where? You said it's going
You'll
to be in
The Guardian.
You'll see it on
The Guardian. Yeah, it's going to be on The Guardian. So and that'll be online probably within the next 24 to 48 hours.
But I'm guessing that the best way to get in touch and to follow every single piece of your work is actually Facebook.